स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणे भगवते अष्टादशाध्यायिने अम्ब त्वाम् अनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्विष्णे। In this study of Bhagavad Gita, we have come to the 6th chapter, and in the course of this, we had been discussing that what happens when the mind becomes calmed down. The effect of this calming down of mind is then perceived by us. Like what happens, suppose it is all dark and you switch on the light. Then you see the effects of light, you can see things clearly, you can identify people, you can read and so forth. So when the mind gets calmed down, comes under control, then there are the effects of it. It is not that you just tell, oh, now my mind is under control. It is not dependent on just declaring, yes, my mind is under control. But the effects are visible. Effects are palpable, tangible in life. And we were seeing these effects last time we studied that 30th verse of 6th chapter, which said that the one with controlled mind then sees the same Lord everywhere. The Lord alone is everywhere, but because of the turbulent mind, because the mind has been continuously creating variegation, we see all this variety and get entangled into it. When we see that it is all the creation of mind, then we see that reality has always been the one same existence, the God alone is. And then God is seen everywhere. And such a person then does not disrespect God. And just to compliment that, it is said that then the God also does not disrespect this person. There was some discussion on that what is the meaning of God disrespecting, or the translation, one of the translations is a beautiful one, that this person does not lose sight of me, nor do I of him. Means that God, from the side of God, there is no such problem. God never loses sight of us. But we feel many times that God is not taking care of me. God is not watching me. I am suffering so much. I have such a bad headache. And then I have had these many problems, the financial difficulties and all. What has God been doing? I have been praying to God, but it seems God doesn't have time to look at me. He is busy with other people maybe, but certainly is not paying attention to me. So when this person sees that sameness, then this idea also goes away. Then you know that God is always with me. The continuous, unbroken presence of God is then felt. So this is an effect of this control of mind. See how important, therefore, is the control of mind. It is important, as we saw, even for most mundane things of life. If the mind is not under control, we sometimes fly in rage. Sometimes we become terribly depressed. Sometimes we become over-elated and do something nonsensical. It is all this happens because the mind is not under control, even in the most mundane everyday life. But when it comes under control, these things are of course taken care of. But much more than that, even on the mundane level, our vision becomes clear. Our perceptions and therefore our decisions, they are taken on a very sound footing. There is less likelihood of mistakes in that. But that's not all. There are the results that pertain to our higher consciousness. We feel this sense that Divine Presence is everywhere, God is everywhere. That assuring thought, how assuring it is when we know that my dear close friend, my true helper is always with me. What an assuring feeling it is. And God is everywhere. God is with me. Now, you don't fear. What a big problem fear is in our life. But when we see even a policeman near me, I lose fear. What to speak of God? That if God is with me, I do not have to fear at all. So this sense that that God is with me, it is a very assuring thing. And this person feels it, and a very important aspect of that is described that yes, God is, and the life gets filled with that feeling. So this is the important aspect. Then next thing is told that how the person deals with other people. If the person is seeing with God, the God everywhere, then somebody may have this doubt that, well, if a person sees God everywhere, how can that person be active in the world? How can that person go to the grocery store to buy things? How can that person go to the his workplace? If I see sameness everywhere, instead of going to grocery store to buy milk, I may just enter in a barber's shop for that person, that purpose. How will I distinguish one from another? How can I decide what is to be done now, what is to be done next? How there will be an order in my life if I see God everywhere? So, therefore, one may come to the conclusion that Triveni will say, no, so I don't need to see God everywhere. Let me see that I am here, and is by my side, and then somebody is here, somebody is there. Let that be. That makes things more convenient to deal with. But it is not that when the God is seen everywhere, other functions, other works, they get all disrupted. Not necessarily. It is therefore said that manifests in your day-to-day living. Your day-to-day activities are now filled with this knowledge. Instead of these activities being done through ignorance, now those very activities are conducted with knowledge. That is the idea in the 31st verse. Sarva bhuta sthitam yo mam bhajatyekatvam asthitah sarvatha vartamanopi sayogi mai vartate. He who worships me, residing in all beings, in a spirit of unity, becomes a yogi and whatever his mode of life lives in me. This is the difference. Whatever is mode of this person's life, like suppose that person is a blacksmith, doesn't have to change profession. No, now I have become yogi, and now therefore let me pick up some other profession. Blacksmithy doesn't go well with this spiritual wisdom. It has nothing to do like that. As we read in that Mahabharata, that you can be a butcher, you can be having any other business in life, they go very well with this spiritual awareness. Swami Vivekananda, in one of his very famous lectures that was delivered in Madras, now Chennai, about how this daily practice of Vedanta helps, he said there that this Vedanta, these truths of Vedanta should be spread everywhere. This let this be the property of everywhere, every person. Let every person have these. That will enliven the life of every person. Every being will get enlightened. But he said, you may ask, how this person will get helped. Suppose that person is a professor, somebody is a lawyer, somebody has a meat shop, somebody has some other business going on. How at all these places, how a janitor gets helped by the knowledge that the same God is in everyone? How a professor gets helped by this knowledge that the same God is in me and also those whom I teach, it is the same God everywhere. How that idea becomes helpful? The idea becomes helpful because now you know the truth, and thus what you were doing earlier because of ignorance, now that ignorance goes away, the knowledge steps in. So what you were doing out of ignorance goes away, but those actions need not go away. For example, that person who is lawyer is still a lawyer, but knows that God is in everything. So therefore, that business or the work that the person does becomes rooted in truth. The person knows the ultimate the purpose of the living, and so forth. So sarvatha vartamanopi, these words are very important. Not that the person becomes just sitting in the at home or just sleeping and whiling away time. No, that person is very active. Very active person can be doing the same works that we all do, and yet those works are carried on with this immense knowledge of God pervading everything. So, and the next verse brings to a kind of conclusion this topic.
Atmaupamyena sarvatra samam pashyati Arjuna sukham va yadi va dukham sayogi paramo matah.
Now Lord says that yogi who sees everywhere the same oneself, as in me, so in others. See, this is psychologically a very important thing to understand, that our whole living is based on this division, that I am a separate entity. I am very special separate entity. I am concerned of my problems above the problems of the whole world. A mosquito biting my skin is far more important to me than millions of people dying somewhere else. It is something because I am very special. Now, therefore, my things become special. If I become angry or agitated, that is fault of somebody else. It is never my fault, you know. It is somebody else makes me angry. Somebody else makes this whole world so bad. I am so good. These other people are not good in the world. It is I become the center of this whole universe. The others, they are all secondarily important. They do not carry that much this. And whether they are there or not there doesn't matter. I am. I run the world. It is, if I am not there, the world is not there. It is, we don't say these things. We have acquired in this modern civilization the art of hiding those things, covering them well. But inside we think that I am really the center of the world. It whirls around me. And if I am not there, the world will just fall away. Everything depends on me. And thus we tend to evaluate ourselves with a different idea. It is like when I talk, then it is always, you know, I discuss. It is the others, they just chit-chat, you know, others are just whiling away and chit-chatting and that whiling away their time. I am always, whatever the adjectives are applied to me in a very different way. I am very firm. I am firm. The other fellow is obstinate. The same thing, no? But the adjective changes there. That I am firm, steadfast. The other is obstinate. So, because I is a very special thing. And that creates so much problem to us because that of the heightened ego. It is, if we observe ourselves, we can see these things. When I commit a mistake, it is a mistake, you know. I never commit a crime. It was a mistake. And therefore, I always feel that I should get some leniency. It should be looked upon with leniency. I didn't understand. I didn't know. Somebody else does the same thing. Oh, my goodness. Such people should not be allowed to live in this world. They are a menace in the society and so forth. It is because of this very special idea about I. Now this yogi, because of this knowledge, Atma Upamyena Sarvatra, this same I is seen everywhere. The whole scene changes. Now, most of us see the same eye in different parts of the body. You don't feel that my left eye has one eye and the right eye has another eye. The nose has third eye. We don't say that. We do not we therefore have any problem whether a thing is in my left hand or in my right hand. But if it is, say, in Vishwanath's hands, then I become concerned. You say, oh, it is my thing, why Vishwanath took it? But I don't have such concern when my left hand has it or right hand has it. Doesn't make a difference because I feel the same eye is in left hand as well as right hand. So, see how much the tension is gone when we know that it is with me. It is the I is in this piece of flesh and this piece of flesh. The same I is there. Now think of this, you know, that if this feeling gets extended, everywhere same I, Atma Upamyena Sarvatra. Then the life will become very different. Sukham va yadiva dukkham, that happiness and suffering is then I now am concerned of my happiness. I should get happiness. Doesn't matter if I have to kill millions of people for that. It is, but then it becomes different. So you see that how do I feel when I become happy? You feel now the same thing about others also. So you now work not only the happiness of this fellow associated with this piece of flesh, but you have now the same feeling now with the others too. It's a very profound idea, friends, that even a little bit of it, when it comes into practice, we understand that how, if I am hurt, how do I feel? We immediately see that with others too, what will happen to them. It is that consideration becomes, in fact, a major sign of spiritual evolution. That this person, therefore, Shankaracharya points out this particular aspect in his commentary on this verse. So this person, therefore, becomes non-violent. Non-violence becomes spontaneous here. Just as you do not hurt yourself, similarly you do not go to hurt anybody else now. You don't like anybody to hurl abuses at you. So similarly you will be now not hurling abuses to somebody else. This becomes now a very important sign. So, for our practical spiritual development, this provides a great indicator that are we developing spiritually can be decided by this. It is not decided by how many hours this fellow sits in meditation. Who knows whether sits or sleeps? So nobody else has a way to judge it. But the behavior is something that everybody can see. How this person behaves with others, how the actual consideration of that person is for others. So this is therefore the life of a saint. There is a great, very well-known prayer of a saint. It is, and we have that recited here many times, that the saint is that who feels the pain of others. Mahatma Gandhi used to like that prayer. The saint is not that who performs miracles, but the saint is that who feels the pain of others as if it is inflicted on oneself. So, Lord points it out that is, and not only that is, he says, the best yogi. He says that he who by comparison with himself looks upon the pleasure and pain in all creatures as similar, that yogi, O Arjuna, is considered the best. So, there are other indications of yoga and yogi he has given, but amongst them, for obviously psychologically helpful reasons, he says that this criterion is for me the best judge as to who is the greatest of the yogis. This is the greatest of the yogis who sees and feels the pleasure and pain similarly as you feel here, so you feel here. It is in that sense this becomes very helpful. As a matter of practice, it is so. Therefore, if we start practicing this aspect, then the yoga will enter us. The yoga, we can become yogi by practicing this idea that let me see what is here is also here. Just as I feel pleasure by this action, the other also will be having the idea of pleasure. So I don't like displeasure. I should not therefore displease others. I don't like pain, so I should not inflict pain on others. Living becomes like that, physically as well as mentally. This person becomes peaceful, non-violent. So, this is non-violence, therefore, is this important practice. Now, Arjuna speaks out the question that bothers the minds of all. Arjuna, as we saw, that is our representative and represents us with tremendous force. The representative that we choose, say, for our constituency should be forceful, should present our problems forcefully to whatever Senate or the Congress. It should forcefully present them. So Arjuna, as our representative, understands the difficulties that we are having and puts them forth very bluntly, very clearly. Without any hesitation, he can speak to Krishna. Because Krishna, although he is his teacher, he is friend also. So with friends you can be very frank. So we don't have inhibition in speaking with friends. So here the beautiful idea in Bhagavad Gita, and that is only in Bhagavad Gita, that this is the dialogue between the disciple and the teacher. But also these disciples and teacher, they are friends. They have been with each other, tied with that relation of friends, and therefore can frankly ask the questions. We find it difficult many times to speak out the question in our mind. We are worried, you know, how should I phrase it, what day my teacher will think if I said such words, or will he say that I am really foolish, stupid fellow, and if he scolds me for my stupidity, what shall I do? So we are not very free in putting forth our questions. We are a bit inhibited by sometimes the sense of shame, sometimes because of our own not having that clarity. So we feel that let it be, you know, it is. I will later on think about it, and then some other time I will email the question instead of asking it. It is. Yes, we email the question to God, you know. That emotion, emotionally we send the question to God. Emotion is like email, you know. Emotion, electronic motion is emotion. So, it is. Therefore, we keep quiet, we do not ask questions, we brood with it ourselves somehow, think that, well, that seems to be the answer anyway, and I don't have time right now, later on I will think about it. But Arjuna frankly asks the question, and that is why it becomes so helpful to somebody, that to have somebody who represents us. This question is about the practicality of all that. And Lord has glorified with all these ideas how the controlling the mind can bring about all this. You will become the highest yogi, yogi paramomataha, just by controlling the mind, just by doing this. And it appears, fine. But Arjuna has not lost sight of the practicality that, but how to control the mind? Sri Ramakrishna told one parable that one beggar was there. He was having many problems, where to live, how to get food, how to get money, and this and that and all. So somebody told him, you know, that all these problems can be solved if you become the emperor. Well, but how to become the emperor now? That is the question. If I become emperor, yes, all these questions, these problems will be solved. But how to become emperor? It is not a simple thing that, well, you just walk there and you will become emperor. Not that you have to just walk half a mile and you become emperor. How to control the mind? It's not an easy task. While Lord was telling all these things, if you control the mind, everything will become fine. But inside, we were all thinking, but how to control the mind? It doesn't look like just easy, like walking to Ben and Jerry and eating some ice cream. It is not as easy to control the mind. So how to control the mind? So Lord gives this question here. Arjuna uvacha, yoyam yogas tvaya proktah samena madhusudana etasyaham na pashyami chanchalatvat sthitim sthiram. Arjuna said, for this yoga that you have described as equanimity, O slayer of Madhu, Sri Krishna, I do not see any permanence owing to the restlessness of the mind. This seems to be utterly impossible. He further elaborates his question in the next verse. Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramathi balavadridham tasyaham nigraham manye vayorivasudushkaram. For the mind, O Krishna, is restless, turbulent, strong and obstinate. I think it is extremely difficult to control like the wind. It is true. After controlling the mind, everything will be attained. But look at the mind, how it is. What you said, Lord, doesn't seem to be practicable at all, because controlling the mind is such a difficult thing. It is chanchalatva sthitim sthiram. He says that the mind keeps on oscillating in a very indisciplined, unpredictable manner. It goes on like that, and how therefore all that you said seems to be just a fairy tale, nothing that connects to the practical living. It is our one doctor that we used to go in the villages with. He had many patients had chronic problems. As one goes, older, one gets that pain in the joints and all that. That never go away. It is. In fact, one doctor told a man, he was about 70, and started complaining that, you know, when I get up from the bed in the morning, the joints, they give so much pain. And the doctor said that the day when you get up without pain in the joints, you can safely assume that you are dead. It is. That is what happens, and it is automatic. There is no cure for these things. So, our doctor would give the medication. Knew that it is. And then would tell that this will work. Only if you... he would put something quite impossible, impracticable for those village people. That it will be helpful only if you take it exactly on time and with hot milk. Now in most of those villages, firstly to obtain milk is not easy. Secondly, at the exact time when in the midst of all those works to exactly take that time and take the medication. So next time after taking the medications, when they would come and say that, it is still there, it hasn't gone. Did you take it with hot milk? No, doctor. Then how will it work? Now that it is hot milk had nothing much to do with it. Had they taken it with hot milk, still it wouldn't have worked. Word is, it would work for a little while. It will remove the pain and all that for some 5 minutes. But it won't work. So he said, did you take it with hot milk? No. Then what can I do if you don't take it with hot? How to get that milk? Getting milk and heating it. We go to work on farms, and then on the farm, how to get that milk at that time? You told that we should take it 3-4 times. It is not possible. Well, what can I do? If it is not possible, then it won't work. So Arjuna says, Lord, your remedies seem to be something like that. If we control the mind, which appears to be far from possible. It is, the mind is just oscillating and vacillating, just running about in a turbulent, uncontrolled way. It is unpredictable what will come in the in somebody's mind, cannot be predicted at all. And thus, controlling mind being impossible, all that you have told makes no sense. You have been, it seems, wasting our time and giving us nice poetic ideas without any practical basis for it. Nice as poetry, of course. It is, you can get a Nobel Prize in poetry for that, or a nice fairy tale imagination. But practically, since the control of mind is impossible, it is this also, all those that go after it, that also is impossible. So, what is this? Why are you doing like that? He elaborates it further. Look at mine. That, how it is? Chanchalam. It is always turbulent and not steady at all. It is restless all the time. It is, in fact, that restlessness has become the nature of our mind. Thinking of different things all the time. Try to keep it, pivoted it on one particular thing. It just slips away. It is, and then he says further that turbulent, strong, it is so strong, it doesn't listen, you know, like if it is weak, you can say, hey, I tell you, do it. No, it is so strong, it refuses to do what you tell. What you tell, it will not obey at all, and you can't do anything about it. To somebody else you can tell, okay, if you are more powerful than that person and can dictate that person. But with mind, it is far more powerful. You cannot tell anything. If you tell the mind, go to sleep, it doesn't go to sleep. It keeps on being awake. In the class, you tell it, no, don't go sleep, listen, you have come to the class to listen, and you go to sleep, you know, at that time mind goes to sleep. So, it is like that, it is, you tell it, don't do this, and it will like to do that. That is the nature of the mind, and very strong, you cannot do anything to it, you cannot force your way with it, and obstinate. Very obstinate. It is just, it refuses to yield. It doesn't want to do that it, you tell it to do. A very difficult thing to deal with. And you, we all know it. That is that, well, the mind doesn't go there. The mind continuously changes. It is one moment it decides something, next moment says, no, I won't do it. At one moment it decides that, yes, I will regularly meditate, get up early in the morning and come to Vedanta Society for morning meditations. And next moment, afterwards it decides, no, what is the use of meditating every day, and I don't see, it is all waste of time, and let me do something useful. And so, that is the nature. You tell something, it accepts at one moment, refuses to do it the next moment. Many times we take a very strong decision. We make a resolution. And then after a while, what happens to that resolution? Did I tell you a nice story about the diary writing? The new year was approaching, and so the diaries were being sold at different stores. All the stationery stores, they had put the boards for the diaries. So, the one store, it had got very nice diaries made. And then very beautiful to look at and all that. So, I had put the price that only $20. And he thought that people will buy it. And then he saw the next day, there was another store had put the diaries, and it had advertised it only for $15. Exactly similar looking, beautiful, nice diary, and he was selling it at $15. And naturally, you know, all diaries were sold from that shop, and this fellow could not sell any. So at the end of that period, when the new year began, now the diaries can't be sold much. So he asked this, that what was your secret? You know, I could not see, even at $15 you cannot even, the cost is more than that, manufacturing cost becomes more than that. How could you sell those at $15? I want to know. Well, we don't disclose business secrets. Well, please, you know that now anyway the business time is over, so what was your secret? And this fellow said, you know, I have studied human psychology. How many pages are in your diary? Said, what is the question? 365 days in the year, I have 365 pages there. You see, I have studied psychology, and I know people make resolutions. So, in the every year, they decide in this. Now, I will regularly write the diary, and I know what happens. Maybe the month of January they maintain it, and in the month of February, to some extent they try. From March they start forgetting. Then it happens like that. So what I did was, I put 31 pages in January. In February I put those 28 or 29. In March I put only 20. In April I reduced them further. And like that, therefore, instead of 365 pages, my diary has only 255 pages. And that is why I could sell it at $15. It is like that. Do that our resolutions, New Year resolutions, do not last a month. In between, and even for one month to make them last, they have to be pretty regular. You know that it is very simple, something for that for which we don't have to really exert much. Such resolutions can somehow last for 1 month, and that also with difficulty. But if something is really very difficult to do, we know that it is very good for us, even at the physical level, that I will take regular physical exercise. It is good, I know it all, that I should be doing it. And some days after making the resolution, for 3 days I might do it. Then the fourth day, I feel today a little back pain is there. So it comes automatically. On the fourth day, it does come. Not that it makes its presence felt. Had there been no such resolution, it won't come, you know. It comes because of the resolution. I have, if not back, then head. So there are so many organs which start giving pain. And otherwise you find some other reason, or just forget, you know, that, oh, I forgot today. Oh, that friend called and therefore I didn't have time to do it. So, like that one does not act on those resolutions. So, mind is like that, very difficult to control. How can you control such a thing? And you are telling me all nice things that will happen after controlling the mind. So how to control the mind first? That is the question. It is very difficult to control the mind. He gives the analogy, very beautiful analogy, like controlling the wind. You go out and tell order, can you do that? Oh, wind, start blowing in the from east to west instead of from west to east. Is it going to obey? It is not going to obey. Why are you moving so fast? Stop. It doesn't work. Can you control wind? No. Can you say that, well, in my sailboat now I want to move in this direction. You start moving, blowing in that direction. It doesn't work with wind. You have to submit to the fancies of winds. You cannot control the wind. And mind, he says, is as turbulent as that. That analogy is there, that in one Sanskrit couplet, it says that how the mind is, it is like a monkey. How turbulent the monkey is. But not just that, the monkey who has been fed, the monkey who is drunk with that alcohol, is all drunk monkey. Then not only that, the monkey is stung by a scorpion. Imagine how turbulent that monkey will be. And in addition to that, now is possessed by a ghost. So, how can you think of controlling that kind of a monkey? Even to control an ordinary monkey is not easy. After all, a monkey. Then in addition to it, all these things have happened. So, similarly, controlling the mind is that difficult. You cannot control the mind. Therefore, O Lord, I do not see any possibility of all those results that we get after controlling it. We all have tried to control the mind, but it just is impossible. Moreover, Shankara says here in his commentary that it affects everything else. Since the mind is not under control, that word pramathi, he interprets that it spreads its influence in our sense organs and motor organs and our behavior in general becomes influenced through that. Because we cannot control the mind, we cannot control our senses, and thus we cannot control our behavior. It is, the mind is like that. So, because of its tremendous influence, the mind not in control, so all those things control behavior and all those things become impossible for us. That is the problem, Krishna. And you have to provide a solution. If you mean that we should take your advice seriously, then you must tell us how to control the mind. And Lord does not disagree with Arjuna. He says, your concerns are right. It is difficult, very difficult, but not impossible. It is very difficult means you need to put in efforts in the right direction and in the right measure. Both these things are important. The efforts should be well directed. They should be properly directed, as well as the measure should be proper. Like if you want to reach, say, California, then you must also go in the right direction. And there should be proper speed also, because it's not a short distance. If you decide to go like that tiny ant going, just like that, maybe after 1 year or so, you may reach from here to the downtown. That's all. That also is doubtful. You can't progress like that in life if it is, even if direction is right, if the speed is such, if there is no power, it won't work. So we have to have both. The efforts should be in right direction, and they should be spirited efforts. So Lord says that with that you will be able to do it. We shall discuss that in details. The two things that he said, one is abhyas and vairagya, that it is to be done through continuous practice and dispassion. Both these are to be applied. One is to go in the right direction, and second is don't go in the wrong direction. Both, why both are to be told? We shall see that we need to be told all both these things. In the next Friday's class, we shall try to discuss those things. Any questions? Yes, John?
I know I'm late.
Yeah, that is not the question.
Yeah, I just came from an AA meeting. I heard a success story tonight. So maybe you could tell me if this is an example of what you were just talking about. Somebody that's been sober for 7 years, and he had an affliction with cigarette smoking. And up until 2 months ago, he got down on his knees and prayed to the Almighty to stop the affliction. And he said that this craving was kindled. And he found out what a drug it really is. So, would you say that would be like an example of...
Yes, that is...
Not going in the right direction and going in the right direction.
Yeah, that is true. It is the right direction, and the results are there to be seen. You see, that if you go in right direction, you will see the results. And this happens because we do not get immediate success that we are looking for. We feel that it is impossible. That is why that at AA's, that 12-step program, the step gives us a psychological gradations, you know, that the path is graded. So if you cannot attain the full success now, let me make one step at least, then next step, then next step. So if one is sincere, one does achieve success there, and this is certainly an example. Yeah. So let us conclude with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Visarehi Yasvayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinesrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namani Yane Karma Pekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu. Thank you.